Blog Talk Radio.
Clap be like so long. The people just love us. They just keep clapping and stuff. You know, we got to tell you to stop clapping so much. Stop clapping so much, y'all. Stop clapping so much. Anyway, welcome. It's February the 6th. We are live. And welcome to Shea Renee and Friends. The crew is here. Sister Estherine, how are you doing today?
Hello, how are you? And bless you, children of the Most High. I'm just so happy to be here as always.
Well, good. We're always happy to have you here as always. And we've got the Coochie Queen. She has stopped by for a few minutes.
Well, hello there, Shay, and hello there, world. I'm so happy to be here. I am the Coochie Queen, and I am so excited to give you some Coochie news and some relationship news this week.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that is the crew. And guys, it is Black History Month. Yes, that's right. February. We get 1 month. That's right. 28 days to celebrate our history. And so tonight and throughout the month of February, which, you know, we don't keep it to 28 days here. We're always talking about something black every Tuesday night. We're talking about something. So anyway, but this month, I'm going to make sure that we have some people that's going to, you know, tell us some things that we might not know when it comes to black history. You know, I'm going to kind of do something a little different. And so make sure you tune in, follow the show, visit our website, subscribe to our website so that you can get emails and be on our email list and our newsletter list and all that good stuff. So make sure that when you go to the website, you subscribe so we can keep you in tune with what's happening and what's going on. But all month long, we're going to be digging deep into long lost history of the African American, or I guess I should say African. But anyway, I've got some black history facts for you all throughout the show also. And without further ado, I would like to introduce my guest tonight. He is a pastor, teacher, husband, father, and I would like to welcome Mr. Derrick Ware. Welcome.
Good evening. Good evening. Yes, your people know they like to keep the clapping going. It's not all that. I'm not all that. I appreciate you. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate being here, Sir Renee. And, well, you know, you said 28 days now. I know that's the shortest month of the year, but sometimes we get a blessing and have 29.
Uh-huh.
Every 4 years. We get 29, so it's 365 and one full day. Yeah, every 4 years, we get one more extra day.
We get an extra month. Day.
We get one extra every 4 years. But I'm glad to be here. I appreciate it. Also, I'm a poppy too. I'm too young and good looking to be considered a grandfather. So I'm poppy to my grandbabies.
So do you tell your grandkids a lot of this history?
Yes, I try to teach them as much as I can. You know, when we initially met, we were at the Civil Rights Museum with the grandbabies. You know, I didn't find out till later that you thought they were our children, but they were our grandchildren.
Yes, so, I thought they were y'all's children.
Yeah, I told you I was too good looking to be granddaddy. That's why I'm poppy. But we had them there that evening just trying to educate them a little bit, you know, trying to get it in them as early as possible.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, you know, hey, you start them young, and, hey, they'll retain that a lot longer than waiting until you get older. Now, I want to ask you this. What made you get into the whole African-American study?
Well, it wasn't anything initially. It was just a yearning. I think that's for me personally. It was just a yearning within me to know my history. And it was just happenstance on how I happened across to be employed at the National Civil Rights Museum. Actually, I worked there back in 98 and 99. This was a few years after it had opened and everything, and I saw the initial way that they had it set up. And so it was more so for me, just a part of me. And I had always felt it missing. But I've always been interested in, you know, our culture, where we came from, what we've been through. And so, you know, a lot of times when we get educated on it, we can misinterpret it, misuse it. We don't look at it through the right lens. You know, we got to learn how to appreciate it versus it enraging us and things of that sort. So when I got into it and I was blessed to even get employed by them at the time I was the lead. Well, I was came in under the guy, and he really, really taught me at the time, a brother by the name of Donald. I became the lead tour guide, and then also in the summertime we had a program where we educated the children from the city of Memphis. It was a phenomenal program. They gave them a stipend to come down for them to learn not only their Black history, for them to get educated in social-emotional skills, and also for them to get educated on how to do interviews and checks and balance checks and things of that sort. So it was a whole program that I was involved in the summertime as well. So it always felt like it was just giving back for me. So,
and I like that you guys deal with the social and emotional issues, because, you know, inner city kids usually do go through a lot more at a young age, considering what they, you know, have to witness in their neighborhoods and stuff like that. So you're dealing with those issues. And so that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we gotta learn that all that stuff, you know, affects us.
Exactly. Now, you know, during Black History Month, you know, usually we hear about Martin, Malcolm, Marcus Garvey, Rosa, you know, and a few more they give us. And it's so much more withheld or hard to find about our history. Why do you think that's so?
Well, you know, the more you know about the history, the more you can really appreciate it. The more you can really become aware of, you know, knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when you keep that knowledge away from people, they don't have that power to really educate themselves, to embrace what they've been through, because I can guarantee you, we can go around to, we can ask 10 Black people, it doesn't matter age, whatever, it doesn't matter social demographics, whatever, we can ask 10 of them, and we can ask them this one question: who was it, whose idea was it to come up with Black History Month?
Mm-hmm.
And I can almost guarantee you 9 out of 10 will not know that answer.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 10.
I've heard several people, and I think somebody told me today that they heard Morgan Freeman say that, you know, he doesn't like Black History Month because there's not any other race or nationality that has a month. There's not a white month. There's not a Asian month. There's not a Hispanic month, you know. I mean, they, you know, every culture has their holidays, but they don't have a month where they celebrate their history. And so a lot of people say they don't even like it. Now, I remember growing up as a kid, that was kind of like how I learned about who I was. And that was during Black History Month, and it was in the church. You know, that's where we learned Black history, in the classroom of the churches. So, you know, I don't think they do that as often as they did back then with me growing up. I think we're kind of evolving back to that? Because, you know, I see more of it, you know, now on the social media platforms and stuff, and a lot of news commentaries that I get. I see more history that they're revealing. Now, out of all the history that you studied concerning African American studies, who's one of your favorites?
Wow, who's one of the favorites? Well, I want to start out with Carter G. Woodson. Carter G. Woodson, if you go back and think about it, and I can understand and I can appreciate where Morgan Freeman is coming from, because we got a lot of our elders and things, you know, they live, so it's a lot easier for them to understand it if they're living it. And
yeah.
See, you know, by the time I come along, you know, they had already paved the way. So therefore, unless I found out about Carter G. Woodson, who is really the father of Black history, who really came up with the whole idea as far as the Black History Month, and that's who it is, you know, just in case a lot of people who are listening don't know, it was Carter G. Woodson. And so I appreciate him for initiating something like that so I can get more educated, like you said, you know, and that way I can pass it down to my children, my children's children, my children's 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 children, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, he was and so when you find out about stuff like that, you know, you find out about certain people, and you know, we got the Martins of the world, we got the Malcolms of the world, but it was so many more people without their names being highlighted who really went through something, like the people in the Little Rock movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? As a matter of fact, if you really, really begin to ask and talk to a lot of more seasoned African-Americans, my senior pastor right now at our church, Effort Alexander, he actually integrated his high school. You know what I'm saying?
He was one of the first.
Right, to integrate his high school. And mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something. He didn't know it at the time. And he said, you know, a lot of times when you think back, you know, it was a lot of struggle, a lot of isolation and stuff like that. See, and these are the people who people don't know about. But when they had their, I think it was like their 50th or 60th anniversary they just had,
mm-hmm.
you had them, when white brothers and sisters were contacting him, they said, Effort, we want you here. We want you to speak because you integrated our school. I mean, lone Black man in that school, you integrated our school. And so you could begin to appreciate what our people went through.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, history, you know, is yesterday. So, you know, every day we write a new page in history. Now, I want to give a little fact about Black history. And I didn't know this because, you know, we just celebrated Rosa Parks' birthday. I think it was February the 4th, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was February the 4th. And Rosa Parks mm-hmm. was not first to do a bus boycott. It was actually Claudette Colvin.
Right.
And it says most people think it was Rosa Parks as the first person to refuse to give up her seat on the bus in Montgomery, Alabama. There were actually several women who came before her, one of whom was Claudette Colvin. It was March 2nd, 1955, when the 15-year-old schoolgirl mm-hmm. refused to move to the back of the bus 9 months before Rosa Parks' stand that launched the Montgomery bus boycott. So that's a little history. Claudette, she had been studying Black leaders like Harriet Tubman in her segregated school. Those conversations had led to discussions around the current day Jim Crow laws they were experiencing when the bus driver ordered Claudette to get up. She refused. It felt like Sojourner Truth was on one side pushing me down and Harriet Tubman was on the other side pushing me down, and I couldn't get up. So, that's a little history. So anyway, but she was arrested and she was thrown in jail. But She was one of the first of several women, they said.
Right. I mean, and absolutely. So many incidences that took place then, there were so many more that even came before the ones who were highlighted. It was just Rosa was the perfect candidate at the perfect time when everybody could rally behind her and relate. And that's what it's all about. That that perfect person at that perfect time. And that's exactly what King has said. You know, she was the perfect one we need to rally behind. Because it's not about the ones who came before, but it just it was just something about him. He was just divinely guided to say, okay, that's not the person we need to get behind right now. You know, they did have the boycotts and all that, but they came and go so it started and stopped so fast. It had no momentum. But when Rosa did it, everybody got behind Rosa, you know, it broke history. December the 1st, you know, back in 55, it made history. So it was just, you know, it was a divine decision.
And it was the biggest boycott. It was the biggest boycott in history also.
Yes.
So it was a major, major impact upon the African-American community. So, but, you know, even, you know, you're a pastor, so, you know, even the Bible says there's a time and season for everything under heaven. So it may have just been that time and that season.
That's all it is.
Now, who are some inventors? Do you know some inventors that you could maybe tell us about? What they created? Do you know any of them? I know we've created a lot of stuff. It was a woman that created a call waiting, I think. A caller ID. I can't remember her name, though.
Caller ID. You know, there's so much of our history that has been hidden from us, even when we invented certain things, rights, because we didn't have the right people behind us to copyright it and things of that sort, stuff was taken away. You know, history was snatched from us. And
you have to look at both ways, too. Now, we did have history, and we ended up selling it for a dollar. So, you know, we've sold history, too. You know?
Well, that's true.
We've lost it, and we've sold it.
That's true. That's true. You know, I can't, you know, it wasn't all on whites.
Yeah.
It wasn't all on me. You know, a lot of times, you know, and especially when, you know, those funds didn't meet, you know, a lot of times they, you know, they took advantage of it. I think about this is an expression that we use right today when we talk about the real McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
See, you know, when you can verify something and say, hey, look, that's the real McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
That came from Elijah McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of our most prominent inventors back in between 1900s, and he really came up with the lubrication of the railroad industry that led to that saying, the real McCoy, about the engine and stuff. And so when people came up with different designs, they were saying that's not McCoy's design. But when they had the railroad, when they knew they had his invention, that's when they said, okay, that's the real McCoy. That's how that expression came along, from Elijah McCoy. His name, this African-American who did this, his name is embedded in our expressions, the way we speak his name, because he was a real McCoy. You know, stuff like that.
Okay.
You come up with stuff like that.
That was something interesting, because, you know, I've heard that. I don't think I've ever said it, though. Like, that's the real McCoy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever said it, but I have heard it.
Yeah.
And so that's good to know. That's good to know. Now, do you know, here's a little Black history facts. I'm just going to be spilling them out here. The earliest record of protest against slavery was by the Quakers in 1688. We've been protesting for a long time.
Isn't that true?
It's 2018. We still
man.
We still protesting.
Still protesting, man.
1688.
Hey, the struggle is
here. Thank you, Quakers.
It's so real.
It was known. It was known as the Society of Friends, and we see we have friends in the Quakers.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. And I'm gonna tell you something. There was no way we could be where we are now without other races, other people of faith getting involved in our struggle.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that could have happened. That's one of the main things that I learned when I was down at the Civil Rights Museum. You know, when you had James Swern and them, the ones who was in the Mississippi burning, you had two white brothers with this black brother who were killed alongside of him. And, you know, when they had the bus rides, I mean, you had white brothers and sisters alongside of our Congressman John Lewis. Got pictures of him bloody, but pictures of white brothers and sisters who were beat up as well. That's when that national tension came, because they began to say, wait a minute, these people just who have this hate, they have just hate, period. It's not it's against everybody. But that was good, because so people can see, hey, this thing is not right altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that's now what was the name? What was that again? What was that called again?
The bus rides.
The bus rides.
Yes, that's where, you know, you had blacks and whites who got on the buses, and they were told, you know, not to get on these buses. Only blacks could be on them, and they rode buses together. They rode them together, and you know, these people risked their lives assisting us, and that's what I had to. I tell a lot of our young black brothers and sisters, I'm like, look, there's no way we could have, we're able to be where we're at right now without the help of a lot of our white counterparts.
I mean,
there were some white people involved in this thing. You know, we can't say, that's why you can't just blanket it in once you learn the history and be so upset with the white race. I'm like, no, everybody's not that way. Hold up. Let's not get so upset thinking that everybody who's light-skinned was against us. No, that's not true.
Well, I totally agree with that, and I tell people all the time is that you have your good and bad in every race. And so, you know, it's in every race, so it's just common. Mm-hmm. It's common, you're gonna have your good, you're gonna have your bad. Everybody ain't raised the same, and it's just what we had to realize. And so, you know, you're gonna have that, and they're gonna do what they know to do, and then you're gonna have those and gonna do what they know to do. But you know, we're one nation, and we're gonna have to learn what did Rodney King say? Get along, or because, you know, it can't continue. We've been protesting since 1688. Come on, it's 2018. It can't continue. That's a long time. I'm tired just by saying that. How much walking that is?
Look, that's so real. Because even when you go back to that timeline, one of the earliest recordings of us showing up here was like 1619. Look how short after that we arrived with, you know, the protesting had begun. And, you know, it's still, you know, not all of us came in boats, but still at the same time, I mean, that's a long time.
You know, I feel like, you know how, you know, they've been telling you since you was a kid. The end of the world is here. I feel like there were black people. Racism is dead.
I'm telling you.
It ain't going to never happen.
it's coming. The time is now. We're in the last hour. I'm telling you. Hey, look,
will it happen? Will it happen?
Right.
Will it happen? 6388 is 2018.
Woo.
And we are still protesting.
Right.
So,
hey, look, I wanted to also, though, I got to mention, I know you mentioned those inventors, Garrett Morgan. Man, this brother here, he was such an inventor. He invented one of the first working gas masks. And guess what? This, a lot of times, them inventors, I'm telling you something, they just amazing. Because even after that, he was the one who invented the first real traffic signal. So, I mean,
he invented the what?
The traffic signal.
Okay.
You know, the stop signs. You know, where the green, red, and yellow light.
Yeah,
the black
person. I heard that one. Say his name again, because I've heard that one before.
Garrett Morgan.
Okay, I've heard that one before.
Not only was it that, but the first effective gas mask. You know, they use them now all around the world. Every army, every military, everywhere, use the gas mask.
Oh, yeah, they use it. Don't let no unarmed little boy get shot. And protest. Oh, they going to sell them. They going to sell a lot of them.
Yeah, that's a mystery.
That's a mystery.
Okay. Hey,
Pastor. How you doing? I'm all right, Sister Rain. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord.
Look, have you invented anything yourself, Sister Rain?
Oh, I invent stuff all the time. Yesterday, I invented a glove with three fingers, because my friend was missing two. And it ain't no gloves with no three fingers. They all got five, so I made some specially for her.
There you go.
I invent stuff every day. The Lord just be speaking to me, and I just be inventing stuff. The Lord just talk to me. He just be talking to me. He do. Pray the Lord. Pray the Lord.
All right.
That's sister.
That's a bad
sister. She get caught up sometimes.
I'm
all right,
baby. I'm
all right.
Okay.
All right.
I love it.
So, but yeah, let me get you a Black History fact real quick. All right, because I always represent the country.
She do. She tells about the country all the time.
But I like the country. I like the whole upbringing and stuff, you know, and just the whole, you know, it was just fun. We just had a lot of fun. So anyway, but one of four cowboys was black. Despite the westerns that you see.
Yes.
And books that you read.
Yes.
And I knew they was black because when I was little, my people was known as the Black Cowboys. We rode horses. So they make it strange. And, you know, we have the Black Rodeo.
I like the Black Rodeo. I like to see them boys ride that bull.
Well, I like the Black Rodeo, too. I like that, too, and I like them when they work that bull and they have that red cape. Yes. Yes.
Good.
Yeah, have you ever been to the Black Rodeo?
I've never been. You know, I want to go so bad.
Well, they got it here, Memphis. They bring it right here.
I said, so they promote the Buffalo Soldiers and all that, huh?
I don't know about the Buffalo Soldiers, but I know about the Black Rodeo. I mean, yes, I just told him. I just know about the rodeo and the cowboy on the bull.
Yeah. That sister, she's a mess.
She is.
But yeah. But you ought to go. And the kids would love it.
I gotta
go.
Always good
food. Yeah, it's always good food and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you gotta go.
That'd be something great to take the grandbabies to, you know?
I mean, and they'll get to see somebody that looks like them doing that.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I don't remember nobody looking like me going up and riding on a bull. I think they look like the Mexicans over there. I don't remember them in me or what. Well, I don't remember them, but, you know, we're way older. I don't even think they had the rodeo when we were coming up, honey. You sure they didn't have the rodeo?
I don't know if they had the rodeo. I was born in 74, so I don't know. Do you know if they had the... Do you know the rodeo was back? When was y'all born?
Don't ask no woman that. You don't never ask no woman that. That is like against the law. That's one of the commandments for women. Don't ever ask. What year?
Oh, okay. Well, you're going to tell me the commandments because I'm a woman. I don't even know them.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you after the show.
Do you know the commandments, Mr. Ware? Do you know the Ten Commandments for women?
I don't know the Ten Commandments. You got to learn me on that. Come on.
Okay, well, we're going to have to have a show. Sister, go tell us.
Well, I mean, I'll give you a couple. Okay, on the Ten Commandments of Women. Never, ever ask them what year they born in or their age.
Okay.
Don't play with their weave. Don't touch their hair. Unless you have permission.
Okay.
Because sometimes the hair will come out. It might not be attached. It might been a fast morning, and I might not have time to attach my wig like I was supposed to. And then you'll be wanting to pull on it, and then it come out, and then I'm embarrassed because I ain't fixed my hair underneath, and I ain't got my wig cap on. See? That's why I wanted to come in.
I get it.
Don't ever put my purse on the floor. That's one to come in. Put my purse on the floor, that means I'm going to be broke. So don't put my purse on the floor. You find a proper chair. My purse need a chair like I need a chair.
Right.
And I'll come with the later with the rest of the commandments, but I think that's enough.
Yeah, okay. Well, Sister Gone, we're going to do a show about the Ten Commandments of Women so everybody will know. Okay. All right.
You know, coming up in an African American home, some of those I didn't know they were part of the Women Ten Commandments, but those are definitely unwritten rules that I learned. That's about their purse on the floor. and you definitely don't touch their hair unless you got permission. I'll tell you. So I knew them. I didn't know I knew it, but I knew them. Okay.
Yeah, it was. I guess that's some more Black history. The Ten Commandments. I didn't even know.
Yeah, but once you begin listening to them, I was like, oh, okay, I do know. Okay.
All right, well, what we'll do is we're going to take a little break. We're going to hear a song. It's called Rise Up by Andrea Day. Love this song. Mm. It's all about Black history. So we're going to be talking about rising up. We've been protesting since 1688, so maybe this song will help us stop protesting. It's 2018. We need to stop protesting. I tell you, it's been too long. I mean, Sam Cooke said it was a change go come. When is it go come? It's 2018 and we can still protest it. We needed to come. Don't you think we needed to come? Yeah, we needed to come. Anyway, we'll be right back. Andrea Day, rise up, guys. This is Shea Renee and Friends. And you are listening to us live.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out. Ooh, mountains. We're gonna walk it out and ooh, mountains. Silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet.
All right, and we're back. I love that song. I can play that song all the time. Love that song. All right. We are back. We are talking about Black History, African American Studies. We're celebrating Black History Month. And here's a little Black History fact. Esther Jones was the real Betty Boop. Now, I'm a Betty Boop fan. I am a Betty Boop fan. And I wear Betty Boop. But why is Betty Boop, like, she looks just like Esther.
Mm-hmm.
But she's white.
Yes.
Her hair is just like Esther. But she's white.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Betty Boop.
Yep.
And so the cartoon character was inspired by the black jazz singer in Harlem.
Yes.
Introduced by cartoonist Max Fleischer in 1930s, the caricature of the jazz age flapper was the first and most famous sex symbol in animation. Betty Boop is best known for her revealing dress, curvatures, features, and signature vocals. Betty Oop, a Duke. Betty, you know, she does a boop boop ba-doop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While there has been controversy over the years, the inspiration has been traced back to Esther Jones, who was also known as Baby Esther and performed regularly in the Cotton Club during the 1920s. Shoot, Esther was performing in the big leagues. She was at the Cotton Club.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead.
Well, you know, what was so funny about Esther, because they stole her image, right? And
there
was a white sister, I can't think of her name, who when they were using Betty Boop, who tried to say that came from her. And so she actually tried to sue and say that it was her image. But when they began to do the research, they found out, they said, no, this was long before you. This image didn't come from you. This came from Esther. And so it's, I can't think of the woman's name, but she tried to sue and say Betty Boo. They got got the inspiration from her, but it was actually from Esther, and Esther never got a penny from that.
Wow.
Yep, never got a penny.
Since she was the first and most famous sex symbol in animation.
Yes.
And you knew it was a black woman because it says curvaceous figure.
Yeah. Keep it real.
So, anyway, she was trademarked for her vocal style of using boops. Mm. And other childlike scat sounds that attracted the attention of actress Helen Kane during the performance in the late 1920s after seeing Baby Esther. And Helen Kane adopted her style and began using boops in her song as well. Finding fame early on, Helen Kane often included this baby style into her music. When Betty Boop was introduced, Kane promptly sued Fleischer and Paramount Public Corporation, stating that they were using her image and style. However, video evidence came to light. Yep, a Baby Esther performing in a nightclub, and the courts ruled against Helen Kane starting. She did not have exclusive rights to the booping style or image, and that the style, in fact, predated her. Damn, Esther, you poor thing. I feel sorry for her.
I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody trying to take Esther. They got to take something from Esther. Esther couldn't have no figure. She couldn't even do no boo.
I mean, Esther couldn't even sing. Esther was hot.
Yeah.
All right, Esther.
They took Poe Esther stuff, you know. She was iconic with that. Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, Betty Boop lives on. I guess you really can't take anything, huh?
Because
she's living
on.
Uh-huh.
Right today.
Yeah.
Right today.
Yeah, she's living on. Mm. All right, Black History Fact. Jerome from the neighborhood was the first man to swap food stamps for daycare. This is another Black History Fact.
Say again?
I guess it depends on what daycare you go to. Jerome from the neighborhood was the first Black man to swap food stamps for daycare. Wow. I guess it depends on what kind of daycare you get.
I can see Jerome doing that.
Yeah. Jerome in his.
Yeah.
I can see that kind of Jerome.
Jerome had to hook up. Yeah, I can see that. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Jerome would do that. It depends on the daycare.
Yeah, that's
I guess
true.
If it was an in-home daycare, you could do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, I got a question for you.
Okay.
So, if somebody wants more knowledge in the history of African-American studies, what are some good places that you would suggest that they look and search?
Well, you know, one of the main things that that's close to my heart is the National Civil Rights Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a wealth of knowledge in there. And I mean, even if you visit once, there's no way you could just digest or take in all of the information that's in there. And actually, after they reconstructed it, there's less information in there now than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing is just pouring over with information. Also, a hidden gem that's in the city that a lot of people don't know about, even living here in the city, and I didn't know about it until then, it's called Slave Haven.
Slave Haven? I've never heard of it.
Right here in Memphis, Tennessee. If I'm not mistaken, they're still owned by Heritage Tours, which is a black-owned company as well. And they take you to a house over on the north side of Memphis, north. and it really shows you there's a house that actually some Jewish people owned at the time, but in their basement, in their cellar, rather, because it's really not even a basement. In the cellar, they had holes, they had drops outside of their house where runaway slaves were. And it's actually on one of the routes on the Underground Railroad where they would drop down on the outside and come in at the bottom. They wind up in the bottom of the house. But the whole time they had pictures up, hey, you know, they're trying to catch runaway slaves, they're trying to buy slaves and things. But they were actually helping slaves escape. And this is a house right here in the city of Memphis. And actually, if you go a little bit over further, just a couple of blocks over, you have the auction block where they took slaves right when they came in, right here on the bluff. They put them up on the block, you know, sell us and all that kind of stuff. These are just some hidden gems that you could really, really find out more about, you know, the African American history. And there's so many other tours and places.
I wonder why they're hidden. I mean, because I thought too, somewhere downtown, isn't it part of the underground, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it somewhere downtown?
Yeah, Slave Haven is part of it.
Yeah.
It was on the route of the Underground Railroad.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
I
don't know if I want to go in there. Can you go in there?
You can go in. You can go in, and then they have the little outhouse where a family had lived if they were to come and stuff like that, where the service lived. I remember it was in 98 when, and this was right when they opened up, we actually got an opportunity to go in before they even had the power on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were promoting it and all that stuff, and it was a group that came from, some guys as well. It was a group come from California, and they were singers.
Mm-hmm.
And they took all of us to Slave Haven because, you know, I had asked her, hey, could they check it out? And she said, well, we don't have the lights on yet. We're about to open it up. But we went in there. It was pitch black. You know, we had the big floodlights and all that kind of stuff, just looking around. And then we went down into that cellar, and they closed the top of it over us. And them sisters and brothers began to sing them Negro spirituals. you talking about folks crying, and you can just feel it. You can feel our ancestors, just the old spirits, and you could just, you talking about snotting and crying, and it was hot. We were sweating. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, oh, my goodness. That's an experience that I will never forget.
It is an experience, because it's like you're seeing actually. I mean, you know, it's one thing to be told about it. It's another thing to actually see it, you know. And so it's kind of like it sensitizes you to what they went through and what they had to, you know, go through in by means of escape. You know,
right?
Like going underground.
These holes were so little. I'm like, oh my God! I mean, we really had to go through some stuff. And it's the same thing. It's the way I feel about, we got the movement going on all across the nation about Black Lives Matter. You know, I'm with that. I understand it. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But my soapbox is, if I'm a white cop, you know, mm-hmm. and I see all this violence that's on television, I see this stuff going on in these neighborhoods, and people got to understand this is my job, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know how you are, sister. Once you finish the show, you're trying to go home and chill, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? That's your job. You're trying to mm-hmm. leave and go home. That's mm-hmm. what they trying to do. So if I come in a neighborhood where all this violence going on, you think I'm not going to be trigger happy? Because I'm trying to clock out and I'm trying to go home, because mm-hmm. I'm seeing what they doing to what we doing to ourselves. Mm-hmm. It has to start within. Black mm-hmm. matters got to Black lives got to matter when Black lives matter to us. If mm-hmm. if we don't matter to us, then it's not going to matter to anybody. I don't care how much march, I don't care how much protesting we do. If we don't stop it, if we don't recognize it and look at it and do something about it ourselves, nobody else can. Can anybody mm-hmm. change that? No protest will not change that. That mm-hmm. change has to come from within.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry. That's my thought.
I do agree. What you just said, because, you know, we can be our own worst enemy, you know, even as people, individually, you know, we are our mm-hmm. own worst mm-hmm. enemy, you know, our biggest competition, our, you know, biggest fight is within ourselves. And so I do believe in that. I do believe that. But I also believe that every situation, a person in the inner city has not asked for some of the incidents that have occurred within the inner city. And
I agree.
And, you know, and because of things that take place inside the inner city, everybody that's in the inner city doesn't mean that they're going to stay in the inner city. Some get out, some go to college, some, you know, are in the inner city, but get out of the inner city. We see it every day. You know what I'm saying? We mm-hmm. see it every day when, you know, artists or, you know, whoever was one way, you know, got in trouble, changed their life for the better, and has done good. So we have to take that into account also. You know what I'm saying? That everybody that is in those neighborhoods, not a throwaway, you know, some people can make a difference and come back to their communities and make a difference, you know? But I do agree, but I also wanted to point that out too, because is that every incident, mm-hmm. you know, I agree with that we do have to love ourselves and respect ourselves and have pride, but every incident that has happened in the inner city, it was not because somebody didn't love themselves. You know what I'm saying? You know, I believe a lot of these people love themselves, because someone was out working, someone was out, you know, they were doing something, you know, even if it was a hustle, they were still out there trying to provide, you know, so,
look,
you know.
Look, I'm telling you, I get that. I agree with it 100%. I agree with what everybody's feeling about, you know, they actually have, you know, it's a license to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. But, you know, and I'm coming, you know, I know you said, well, you came, you know, you was born, I was just a year after, 73. So I came up with the racial profiling.
Mm-hmm.
But see, we come up in the era without the cell phones, without
mm-hmm.
everybody being able to video it. So, you know, it was something
yeah.
that has already been going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're just able to video it now.
Exactly. You're able to see it. You're able to hear about
right.
it on the news now. It's getting mass publicity now than what
right.
it did. You should just get the neighborhood noise, you know? The neighborhood
right.
Yeah, it got as far as the neighborhood local news, you know?
Right.
But now it's hit national news, and so we're seeing
right.
it more now. Yeah, it's been it's been happening since, I think, well, they came into existence. The reason why they were created was to protect people and their valuables. So, you know, they were put in effect to protect those who have things.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know. So I can understand
yeah.
they go to the neighborhood and ain't nobody got shit. You know, I mean, ain't nobody got nothing. Excuse me. Ain't nobody got nothing.
Dig it.
I can understand. No.
Right.
But, you know, I just like to have some fun. We are almost out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're almost
oh,
out of time.
It is. Oh, man. Oh, wow. Time is flip.
Look, everybody thinks an hour is a long time, and I tell them that once we get on the air, time's going to fly by, and you're not going to feel like you've been on the air for an hour.
Mm.
So do you feel like you've
no,
been
I'm...
on the air for an hour?
No, I don't feel that way at all. You know, I still want to stay here and chill with y'all, you and your crew. You know, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I really appreciate, you know, the opportunity to invite to come on down and just, you know, just have some fun with y'all and just, you know, just sit back. It's really, you know, this is really beauty shop and barbershop talk, you know. Really.
Well, Pastor, Pastor, now, we can get each other's number and talk after the show. This is Sister Esther Rain now. I mean, I'm just
uh-oh.
Putting it out there.
Uh-oh. First Lady might have something to say about that. you know how First Lady is.
I got a First Lady too. I didn't know it was a First Lady. Oh, please forgive me, Lord, Lord, oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord, I'm going to have to go home and pray. Oh, Lord. I'm going to go get on the altar.
You ain't got to get on the altar. You just didn't know it was. But...
I know, but I didn't want his ass, you know. His ass fall up on me. He going to fall into it. I just already know it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to tip you.
Oh, he okay, Fufu. You okay. You let her know you all right.
I'm all right. I'm all right, sister. Now, you know. Yeah, got to be careful now. I'm still human.
All right. Well, Derek, I appreciate you for stopping by and giving us some African-American history and a little bit of knowledge. And, hey, I'll be getting back with you because it is Black History Month, and we do want to know some more history concerning our history. And so before we get up out of here, let me give you one more Black History fact. The first licensed African-American female pilot was named Bessie Coleman. She was born in Atlanta, Texas. So if you go to Texas off of 59, you'll roll right through Atlanta, Texas. And she was born in 1892. Bessie Coleman grew up in a world of harsh poverty, discrimination, and segregation. She moved to Chicago at 23 to seek her fortune, but found little opportunity there as well. Wild tale of flying exploits from returning World War I soldiers first inspired her to explore aviation. She faced a double stigma in that dream before being both African-American and a woman. She set her sights on France in order to reach her dreams and begin studying in France. And in 1920, Coleman crossed the ocean with all her savings and financial support. And she became one of the first African-American, or she, well, financial support of Robert Abbott, one of the first African-American millionaires. Over the next 7 months, she learned how to fly. So she married a millionaire, learned how to fly, and she was the first licensed African-American female pilot.
Wow. Now,
Bessie Coleman. All right, guys. Well, if no one's told you that they love you, we're telling you that we love you.
We love you. Yes, we love you, darlings. We love you.
Yes, and until next week, hey, love more, laugh more. Say, motivate somebody, okay? Until next time, much love.
Much love.